Going beyond the headlines to the deeper issues. 96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment, where your questions and comments matter at 202-319-7810. Join the conversation.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment. I'm Harold Fisher. Your children are becoming teenagers, or perhaps they're already there, and most parents are a little nervous about those first dates, where they're going and what they're doing. But there is a difficult reality that parents and teens are now having to address: the possibility that their teenager may be the victim or even the perpetrator of some form of dating violence. Tonight, we're going to discuss this little talked about issue and give you the tools to recognize if it's something that's happening with your teenager. My guests are Dr. Akosa McFadgian. She is the Director of Interpersonal Violence Prevention at Howard University. Marsha Woodland, advocate and founder of the Building Bridges Foundation. And Christina Jones, Special Counsel for Strategic Youth Initiative with the D.C. Attorney General's Office. Lines are open. If you have a question or a comment, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You're certainly welcome to tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Ladies, thanks for coming in. I really appreciate it.
Oh, Thank you for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Let me talk a little bit about some numbers. According to a violence exposure and teen dating study for violence among African American youth. This has to do, of course, with dating violence. This is a 2014 study. Nearly 1 in 11 female and 1 in 15 male high school students report having experienced physical dating violence in the last year. That is frightening.
The numbers are actually higher in D.C.
Really?
In the 2019 OSCE Student Risk Behavior Survey, it showed that 10% of D.C. high school students experienced physical dating violence in the last 12 months, and that's in the year of 2019.
That's a lot.
That's a whole lot. And 5.7% of D.C. high school students experienced sexual dating violence in 2019, and then 19.6% of D.C. high school students in 2019 experienced emotional dating violence. So think about it like this. Take a classroom of 20 kids in a D.C. high school. In that classroom, you have two kids who've experienced physical violence, one kid who've experienced sexual violence, and four who've experienced emotional violence. So this problem is pervasive in our community. We just aren't talking about it.
How do you know this?
We know this because of what the students report, and we also know that teen dating violence is severely underreported. Studies show that 33% of victims of teen dating violence tell anybody. That's family, friends, law enforcement. It is a severely underreported issue going on.
Marsha, you deal with teenagers often. Do you concur with what Christina is sharing? What are these young people telling you?
I do concur. Thank you, Christina. In Maryland, a 2019 study showed 1 in 3 teens reported in Prince George's County teen dating violence, and 1 in 10 males reported experiencing teen dating violence, 1 in 5 females sexual violence, and 1 in 7 males teen sexual violence.
But let's go inside the numbers, because as I said, you talk to young people.
I do all the time.
What are they telling you?
He loves me. That's the number one thing. I love him and he loves me. And when I hear that, that causes me to take a deeper look into why does this teenager have such a great need to feel love from this person? You know, what is this indicative of? What is this a symptom of?
Are they telling you that they are on the receiving end of physical violence?
Well, they don't have to tell me, Harold. I'm stationed at the United Medical Center in Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. And so I'm crossing paths with them in the emergency room.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing. Dr. McFadgian, in your capacity here at Howard, what are young people telling you?
Well, students here at Howard University, they are definitely at a position where they are ready to slightly have those conversations. But I think what's important for young people 13 to 18 years of age, developmentally, it's not appropriate to tell someone how you feel about relationships, because most parents feel like as teenagers, you're not involved in a serious relationship. It's just somebody you like. It'll blow over. And so they're not having serious conversations with the young people about developmentally what it means to love someone. Mm-hmm. What does it mean to feel love? What does it mean to feel sexually attracted to someone? And what is that like? How will I know when it happens to me? And so if we're not having a conversation with them, when someone engages with them physically or grooming them to be abusive, then they don't recognize the signs, because no one told me what that means to have a conversation with someone about love, about sex. So here at Howard University, we spend a lot of time around prevention and healthy relationships and helping students figure out what that looks like for them.
See what we see on the other side as well is the fact that because no one is talking to teens, there are teens who are exhibiting these abusive behaviors, but because no one is talking to them about what are the warning signs? What do you do when you disagree with somebody mm-hmm. that you're in a relationship with? What do you do mm-hmm. when you don't trust somebody? Do you resort to manipulation? Do you resort to isolation, or do you resort to communication? So mm-hmm. no one, we're seeing in the Office of the Attorney General, the teen dating violence on the other side in the cases that we see, because we do prosecute juvenile crime and we have a domestic violence section. So we're seeing it on the back end. And if we can prevent these abusive behaviors from really fully forming, that would be a win.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We're talking about teen dating violence, what parents need to know, what they need to look out for, how can it be addressed. Give me a call if you have a question or a comment at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Dan, calling from D.C. Thanks for calling, Dan. What's on your mind? Dan, are you there? Do we have Dan? Dan, give me a call back. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Dr. McFadgian, you were about to say something.
I just think I don't want the point to be missed with that Christina is raising, because a lot of times young people in relationships, they don't recognize when conflicts happen, and this means this is not a good relationship or something's bad. Healthy relationships are not all good, and they're not all bad. I always tell students, if you haven't had an argument in your relationship, then it's not healthy, because there are going to be times when you disagree with your partner. And Christina is right. We're not teaching our young people how to engage, have healthy rules of engagement when we have a conflict and we have a disagreement. And so they either receive the abuse and say, well, maybe this is how that person interprets my behavior. Maybe I could do something differently. Not recognizing the fact that dating violence, domestic violence, is about power and control. It's about someone making the choice, someone making the decision to be abusive to another person. Can someone be provoked? Absolutely. But you still can make a choice.
Is this the identical twin to the domestic violence that we see in married or partnered relationships? Is it exactly the same?
No, it's not exactly the same. The intricacies of it, yes. In the bottom philosophy of both is power and control. But when we talk about domestic relationships, we're essentially talking about a context within which two people live together or they have an intimate relationships ongoingly. When we have dating violence, this is much more about courtship. And I'm going home, you're going home, but how are we going to maintain contact with each other? Am I constantly going to be texting you, making sure you're quote-unquote at basketball practice and cheerleader practice? Or is it going to be a situation where you can't hang out with your friends? So they get to control within a very small amount of time during class, during school, But then now they've got to work very diligently to enhance or engage that controlling system outside of the school, whereas in domestic, it's not the case.
And see, I would almost say it is almost like a mirror, because I prosecuted both adult domestic violence and juvenile domestic violence. And yes, the principles of power and control are still there. But seeing two teenagers in a relationship, it's almost as if they're married to each other. That bond that they have, that I don't want to be without you. Anybody ever heard of Romeo and Juliet? Mm-hmm. That whole, you know, mm-hmm. I'm going to die if I don't have you with me, is a mirror of an adult relationship. So you do at the base have that same power and control, that same wheel of, you know, I blow up, I'm so sorry, here's your flowers, please forgive me. Mm-hmm. Then you have that build up, then that blow up is, you know, it's the power and control.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about teen dating violence, what parents need to know. Patricia, calling from West Virginia. Patricia, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Sure. I just have a comment. I think that every young person needs to have a safe adult in their lives that they can talk to about anything without feeling ashamed to. I have two biological sons. When they were growing up, they could talk to me about anything, because if I don't tell them, their friends are going to make up the rules for them. Some other unsafe adult's going to make up the rules for them. So I thought that it was very important that they could come directly to me and nothing was off the table.
Hmm. Patricia, thank you so much. What about that, Marcia?
I think that Patricia is absolutely right. Having someone that you could be as screwed up as you are with, without fear of judgment or punishment, is crucial.
Is that hard to get to a young person who may be having an issue? Because, you know, as Dr. McFadgian said, sometimes it's difficult to get the layers of the onion to be revealed when you're talking about young people and the adults who are trying to make sure that they're safe.
Well, it can be difficult. I have been able to be very successful in doing so because I have been a teen victim of violence. And so I pretty much can meet them where they are. If I have to sit down on the floor in some sweatpants with them and talk to them, then that's what I'll do. Mm-hmm. And so it's about your approach. And I tend to try to build a mutual relationship with them where we partner. No big I, no little you. Mm. You know, so a partnering with the teen is a great way to, you know, break the ice.
Mm-hmm. All of you have resources that you want to share for those who may be looking for help for their teenager or for themselves as they try to address this. Do you want to start, Dr. McFadgian?
A pretty good website is Love is Respect.
Again, please.
Loveisrespect.org. There's also Break the Cycle, but I want to just say a lot of the information, I shouldn't say most of the information that's available online speaks to a gender construction of where women or girls are often victims and males are perpetrators. But I want to add that males can absolutely be victims mm-hmm. of dating violence, and females, young girls, can absolutely be perpetrators of it, too.
Mm-hmm. Anything you want to share, Marcia?
Absolutely. The D.C. Coalition Against Domestic Violence. Mm-hmm. You can find all sorts of resources there.
Okay. And Christina?
And last but not least, D.C. Safe, SAFE. They have a domestic violence hotline. The number is 1-844-443-5732.
Can I have that number one more time?
Sure. 1-844-443-5732.
And that's called DC Safe?
Yes.
32. So all of the information that we are sharing with you tonight will be posted, as always, on our website on WHUR.com. That information will be on our website after 8:30, in addition to the podcast. Before I take a break, one of the things that I do want to kind of, you know, share very, very briefly, because we were talking about the various and sundry, you know, forms of teen dating violence. It's not always physical violence, but real quick,
how do you know when something is abusive? If you have, I had a teenager, the texting is out of control. My daughter texts me, and sometimes I think that she's just doing, you know, too much. So how does a parent determine whether, for example, something as the constant texting is abusive as opposed to just what teenagers do? Is it is what being said?
Well, my daughter being afraid to miss a phone call or walking around on eggshells if she misses a call or she has to text right back. You know, those things are red flags to me.
Also, look at how they handle conflict. If they handle conflict a certain way before they got in a relationship, but now when you have conflict with them, they start to shrink back, or maybe they start to flinch, or maybe they start to blow up in a way they haven't before, that can be an indicator that within their relationship, that's the type of behaviors they have been exhibiting with their partner when they're going to conflict.
I need to take a break. I want to continue with this part of the conversation in just a little bit. But again, we want to remind you that you can hear every edition of the Daily Drum Inside segment in its entirety via podcast on WHUR.com. Just kick on community to find the program you want to hear. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Angela Stribling is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. We'll be back on Sirius XM in just 15 seconds.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, SiriusXM Channel 142, HBCU and SiriusXM Channel 141, HUR Voices, Washington.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight, we're talking about teen dating violence, what parents need to know. My guests are Dr. Akosa McFadyen, Director of Interpersonal Violence Prevention at Howard University, Marsha Woodland, advocate and founder of the Building Bridges Foundation, and Christina Jones, Special Counsel for Strategic Youth Initiative and the D.C. Attorney General's Office. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Can we talk a little bit more about what parents should be looking for?
Yes. If parents are seeing that their student or their teen is losing interest in activities that they've commonly been very interested in or accustomed to, if they find that they are changing their study habits, if they find that they don't like being isolated from, you know, teens love to go to their rooms when they get home and close the door. Trust me. All the doors in my house are closed very frequently these days. But if it's a situation where they're in there and they're not engaged like they really would, typically would, like come down for dinner, come out to say hi, come out and get mail. But if it's to a point where they're isolating themselves on extreme end, if they find that their student or their young person is not necessarily antagonistic with the parent, but doing so more like they're walking on eggshells and very agitated by very simple things. Any questions that they might have about, the parent might have questions about the relationships with other people, with their friends, and they're very agitated with those kind of questions when normally that wouldn't be the issue. So just students acting outside of what their normal behavior is. And for a teen, that can be up and down, but parents know. If parents are engaged to the point where they know their teen comes home, they go straight to their room, they listen to music and do homework, and now they come home and you don't hear anything. They don't want to have any conversations even about the day. Even if the normal response is, I had a good day, it was good, it was fine, yes, no. But if it's, I don't really want to talk about it, why are you asking me those kind of questions? Why do you want to know what my friends are doing? Why do you want to know why am I not hanging out with my friends this weekend? So asking those kind of defensive kind of questions.
Mm-hmm. How can you ask your teenager about these things, whether you suspect them or not? Should you be direct?
should you be?
It depends on the relationship. So I often tell parents and even students here at Howard, create the conversation outside of yourself if you're uncomfortable with it. So it can be something that you saw on television. You can lie. It's okay to lie and say, you know what? I read this newspaper, and you probably haven't picked up a newspaper in a very long time. But just say,
none of us have.
But just say, you know, I was reading this article the other day, and it was talking about this 15-year-old that had a relationship with this girl, and she was controlling how often or how frequently he responded to her texts, how often she met him after school, after football practice. That's crazy. Like, do you or your friends do that? Oh, and then when they start talking about their other friends and how their friends are engaged in relationships, then when you get them talking about other people, then, wow, what would you think? What do you think about that? What would you do in this situation?
Yeah, that's a good sneaky way to do it. I also would say that clear is kind and unclear is unkind, which is something my mentor in my head, Brene Brown, says all the time. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes as parents, if you blanketly come down and say, I don't like this person you're dating, that's going to turn your teen off. But if you say, I didn't like the way I heard her talk to you when you said X, or I didn't like the way he made you go back and change your clothes when you guys were going to the mall, being very specific about the problem and not general about the person would be a win in a household.
Your thoughts, Marcia?
I agree. Well, I agree with both of them. It depends on the relationship that you have. Sometimes I'm not the person to broach the conversation with my daughter.
Yeah.
And for a lot of parents, it's difficult for them to stand down or step aside. Mm-hmm. But I would much rather have a win with my daughter, even if that means handing her over to Christina to have the talk. Mm-hmm. We're not all equipped to do that.
I thought about that when the person asked the question about having a safe person. I think it is great to have a safe person, but the safe person doesn't always have to be the parent.
It just doesn't.
It can be someone you trust, you know, because I'm real good about calling one of my girlfriends. Okay, look, I need you to call, you know, my daughter and listen, this is the issue. Oh, I need you to call my son and, you know, here is what I need you to say. And so they probably listen. But anyway, still have that conversation with that person. So when they have the conversation with them, I'm very clear. You don't have to tell me what the conversation involved. Now, if they're unsafe, I need to know.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's just a situation where y'all are working out how they're going to work that situation out, then it's fine.
Let me go back to the phone lines. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Ellen calling from Tyson, Virginia. What's on your mind?
Hi. My concern is when my teenager was just, you know, using the social media and their telephone, and they always, you know, like it, for us, if we're mad at one of our spouses or whatever, we'll take a break and we won't speak. But they don't know how to handle and they don't know how to stop that communication and give each other a break, and they go from like 0 to 100, like, you know, they're not talking to me anymore, I'm going to kill myself. And it's just so sad because you don't know what the person on the other end is telling them, texting them. So, you know, are you seeing a lot more of that? I just wanted to get your opinion on that.
Yeah, there's you. What you're feeling and what you're seeing is not abnormal. Students, young people do go from 0 to 10. They block the person on social media. They stop all kinds of conversation. But then they're having this conversation with themselves about, is the person trying to reach out to me? And so I very often will suggest it's not necessary to block the person. Now, unless the person is unsafe, then that might be the case. But don't block the conversation. Just give what you're saying in terms of how you're making me feel. So it can be a text message. Don't have to pick up the phone, but just text and say, you're really making me uncomfortable. You really hurt me when you said XYZ. When you made me do this, this is how it made me feel. And then say your piece. Now, if the person doesn't respond or if the person doesn't receive your stance, then let's take a break. Let's put the phone down for a little while.
I want to elaborate on that. It depends on what the person's motives are.
What do you mean by
that? I wouldn't encourage a teen to block the person to provoke them. or to get a rise or reaction out of the other person. I'm blocking you because it's what I need to do to stay safe. For my own self-regulation, then I encourage that. But that's a form of coercion within itself and manipulation if I'm blocking you to get a reaction out of you.
And I think sometimes, too, we need to encourage our teens to really think about personal space and boundaries. And if someone does not want to talk to you, it's important to communicate. That's their boundary. And to respect somebody and be in a healthy relationship, you have to know what their boundaries are, and you have to communicate your own boundaries so that you guys can be on the same page with where you are in that relationship.
This is so complicated because... And I'm just listening to Marcia. We're talking about teenagers. Adults do this.
Correct.
Okay.
Yes.
You know, I have friends who talk about guys that they block, but only temporarily.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, if you're going to block, just block them permanently. You know, but when it comes to teenagers, and in Ellen's case, she's certainly looking for guidance, it sounds to me as if there needs to be some kind of conversation or communication.
Correct. Yep. Having a conversation with her teen about help him or her process their feelings about the issue. Not a conversation where, as a parent, you say, well, you need some time, you need peace, you need boundaries, you need to just go do something else. No, let's talk about why you're feeling this angst around not having a conversation with them right now. Yeah. Let's talk about that. And whatever they say, you receive it and say, I hear you. And let's try and figure out how can I help you create some healthier boundaries, mm-hmm. just for yourself in terms of self-regulation, what Marcia's saying, but then also creating boundaries for the other person too.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810, Carl, calling from D.C. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, I was calling to find out if you had a friend that was trying to give advice to a friend in an abusive relationship, but they weren't listening to that friend. How could you help that friend to get out of that relationship?
Okay, so here's my question. Is the friend the receiver of the abuse or the perpetrator of the abuse?
The receiver.
Okay.
Be consistently present. Because all of us know that it takes a very long time for a victim, survivor, to leave a relationship. And Marcia knows probably better than we do that when a person decides to leave a relationship, it can be the most volatile and most unsafe time in that relationship. So be consistently present. And what that means is if the person comes to you and they've said, my partner did X, Y, Z again, don't judge them. Don't make them feel like, okay, well, didn't they do that last weekend? I'm tired of you coming to me talking about this relationship. You need to leave him. You need to leave her. Rather than have that kind of conversation, receive them and say, okay, how are you feeling? What do you need me to do? What do you want to do? You want pizza and, you know, Kool-Aid tonight? You want to go to Thai? You want to go dancing? Like, let me help you figure out what it is that you want to do. And a lot of times students will just say, I just want to sit, or I just want to cry, and I just want you to just be here. And even though you might be processing your thoughts about that person, I always tell students, when you put expectations on your friends that they have to leave the relationship, now they're in an abusive relationship with you. Mm-hmm. Because you've put these extreme expectations and terms that they have to abide by in order to be in a relationship with you. No, if you're their friend, you're supposed to be there, like we say, ride or die. So let me just wait it out. Let me be patient. Let me be supportive. And when that person is ready to leave that relationship, I promise you, they're going to come to you. They're not coming to you if you made them feel bad about last weekend taking that person, you know, their abusive person
back.
Because
they're embarrassed.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And one of the ways that you can help them always is to be a resource broker for them, mm-hmm. and be a cheerleader. Give them information, not ultimatums. Mm-hmm.
And Carl, certainly hats off to you for being a friend who is willing to step up and look for help in trying to assist your friend remove him or herself from that situation. So certainly thank you so much for your phone call. I want to talk a little bit about where does this, you know, this come from? You know, Christina, you were a prosecutor. Mm-hmm. So in prosecuting these kinds of cases, what is the genesis of the abuser, the teen abuser? Why are they doing this?
So we had a teen dating violence summit this past Friday.
Yes.
So in that summit, we actually trained students to talk on the panels about emotional, physical, sexual, and cyber dating violence, because we know kids listen to other kids. And in the emotional dating violence panel, a teen boy actually said something that really struck me when he said, "I hear what you guys are saying about emotional abuse and why you shouldn't have that in your relationships. But what do I do if that's what I hear at home and that's all I'm doing is repeating what I hear at home in my relationships?" So to answer your question, a lot of it starts, the genesis is at home. And if a kid is used to being talked to a certain type of way, is used to being yelled at a certain type of way, they're just going to repeat and mimic those behaviors in their relationship. And they're going to graduate from being a teenager in a dating violence situation to being an adult in a domestic violence situation. So we say this all the time that it starts at home, but it really does start with how you talk to your kid. It's going to be how they talk to other people.
What about, from a parent's perspective, if they believe that their child is the perpetrator of some form of teen dating violence, even if that parent may not think that they may be the cause, and they may not be. They may have a happy and civil mm-hmm. home, but a son or a daughter may be contributing to that kind of thing. How do you address that?
Talk to your student or your young person about boundaries and what kind of behavior do they want for themselves. If you feel like you're in a relationship where you can't, you feel like you're not receiving what you want, and I'm not talking about ultimatums like they have to get what they want in a relationship, but what are your needs? What are your desires? Even as teens, they have to talk about that. Do you want someone to listen to you? Do you want someone to support you when you're having an argument with, you know, with their parents? So they have to be able to say to the student, what is it that you want for yourself? And then allow the person to respond. But then now, so are you giving the person that you're in a relationship that same respect? Are you giving the other person the time to be heard, to be listened to give their frustrations and their comments? Are you providing a space where you're giving ultimatums? Because it doesn't make you feel good. So even if I'm the parent and I have a kid who is, I find out, is perpetrating abuse, so tell me, what is it about our relationship that made you feel like that was okay? Or what about my relationship with your father that made that be okay, to Christina's point? And so now you get them talking about what they've seen. Mm-hmm. And she's right. It starts at home, but the huge issue is, if it's not discussed at home, then they're going to get it somewhere else. They're exposed Absolutely. To all kinds of relationships and what they look like in social media. And so if we don't give them those basic rules or rules of engagement or guidelines, then they're going to be exposed to other places. And when they see it on TV, well, all he had to do was slap her and she was quiet. And she was quiet. So that might work for me, because my girl is getting on my last nerve. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So we have to give them the basic rules of engagement. And if they feel like that they are not getting that in return, then it's time for that relationship to cease. You are not healthy enough to be in a relationship.
And it's so interesting. We actually had a parent come to the summit, and they said, you know, my child isn't dating. You know, I wish you guys would be telling kids not to date instead of telling them how to date. And I really had a frank conversation with the parent and said, okay, your kid may not be dating at this age, but at some point they're going to be dating. And if you never talk to them about the warning signs, right, they're going to end up right back in a courtroom and yep. be somebody who is a victim / survivor of domestic violence. If you never talk to them about these things, you're putting your kid at risk yes. by staying silent because you think they're not dating. And I bet you, one, they probably are dating.
Believe me, just because you don't think
just because they're not
dating.
Talking to you. And right. even if they, for some reason, they're not dating, which is fine if they weren't, but their friends are dating. Mm-hmm. So you need to be able to know the warning signs to help your friend and engage in bystander intervention when you can.
You know, I was, you know, kind of thinking back about how frequently you should have a conversation with your child about this, whether you suspect anything or not. And, you know, my daughter's a young adult. She's here at Howard. But when she was an older teenager, and she's had, and I know she would not, she would probably kill me if I mention this, but anyway, she's not listening because she's studying, right, sweetie? Yes, you are.
Yes, she's studying.
She's studying. But, you know, had the same boyfriend since 11th grade, same guy. And, but as a parent, you know, you watch the ups and downs and the ebbs and flows. And I remember I asked her one day, I said, when I thought they might be having problems, and she said, no, you know how it is, Dad. And I said, he ain't putting your hands on you, is he? And her reaction, and this has to do with knowing your child. Mm-hmm. But I remember her reaction convinced me that that wasn't happening because her response, she really bristled and she said, oh, no, we're not doing that. You know, I mean, she was extremely clear mm-hmm. about that. And at that point, any tension as a parent that I may have had mm-hmm. about that particular issue, I was convinced that it wasn't happening. Well, you know, several years later, he's still around, and yeah. I'm still, you know, asking. And I think, and this is one of the things, and I'd like for you to comment on this. One thing that she said to me, and you know, and God bless her. One day when they were having some issues, and I was asking her questions, and she was answering some of them, and she said to me, Dad, I want to be able to manage my own relationships. Yeah, she's grown. She's an adult in a little body. But, you know, but I think, you know, how do you balance the parenting and not even so much about the violence issue, but at some point, you know, your child is not going to want you in their business. Mm-hmm. So how do you get it's the information tough. Without getting in their business?
Well, I want to play devil's advocate. Mm-hmm. One of the barriers to having healthy, meaningful, and productive conversations with teens around this topic is this prison-like, trapped feeling that a lot of teenagers have. One, they don't want to embarrass their parents. You know, they don't want to make them feel bad or feel guilty. So irregardless of all of the things, all of the baggage that they as teens are dragging around, much of which comes from home, mm-hmm. they try and act like it doesn't exist. And so while mom is scratching her head trying to figure out why her daughter would end up in a violent relationship, more or less, and stay in it, mom isn't tracing it all back mm-hmm. to when he or she was a little girl. Because people don't just get up one day and become a victim. Mm-hmm. It's a process mm-hmm. most of the time.
Right.
You know, especially when it comes to relationships. You know, I was predisposed to victimization because that's what I saw on a regular basis. So it was normalized for me. Mm-hmm. And so when the person hit me, I thought he loved me.
How old were you?
17.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
I thought that maybe if I hadn't done this or that, mm-hmm. it wouldn't have happened. Mm-hmm. And then more importantly, I stayed because in some sick way, I thought I couldn't do any better or I deserved it. Mm-hmm. And so we have to make sure that our children's allegiance to us isn't superseding them being able to talk to us honestly and openly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And to that point, because I meant to mention this earlier, you actually have an event that focuses on this particular issue. Tell me about that, Marsha.
It's an event happening on the 29th.
Saturday,
February 29th at 10 a.m. from 10 to 1 at 6611 Walker Mill Road in Capitol Heights, Maryland. 6611 Walker Mill Road, Capitol Heights, Maryland.
And what's the event?
It's a teen dating violence awareness and prevention event.
What's going to happen there?
Well, we have the D.C. and Prince George's County Human Trafficking Task Force coming out. We have a trauma specialist coming out to talk to parents about being able to talk to their teens. And we're going to have a lot of activities and events surrounding the topic.
Is it also open to young people?
It's absolutely open to young people. Okay. And the event is free.
It's free. And again, what's the address? Is that a private home or is it a community center?
It's actually, we're partnering. Building Bridges is partnering with Trinidad Baptist Church. So 6611 Walker Mill Road, Capitol Heights, Maryland.
Okay, I'll make sure that information is also on the website tonight so that anyone who is interested in attending, can do so. I think, are these, for the boys who may be on the receiving end of this, how is addressing this with them different? You're shaking your head.
I am. Because I have found that you have to be gender specific when you're dealing with a male, because a female may come right out when they're ready to and say, you know, oh, he's hitting me. I can come through the front door with a female, but I may have to go in the back door with a male.
Because why is that? What do you mean by going in the back door with them?
I think I'll just add, because in our country, in the world, gender, the way gender is constructed, we're socialized to assign certain behaviors to certain genders. And so men are socialized to believe, falsely believe, that it's not okay for them to have feelings about their relationships. It's not okay for someone to push you and antagonize you and say threatening words like, yeah, you can't hit me because if you do, I'm going to go and get my brother. You can't do anything because if the police come, then you're going to be arrested. It won't be me. So,
but hold on. Let me back up because you said something that really struck me. You said boys are not socialized to have feelings about their relationships. Mm-hmm. That doesn't even sound right.
If
you're in a relationship, then you're mm-hmm. supposed to have feelings. So mm-hmm. If you don't have feelings, then how are you in a relationship?
Men in this country are socialized to believe that even if they are in a relationship, their feelings are predicated upon how the woman or how their partner is feeling about their relationship. Mm. They're not allowed to feel, express their own feelings about their disagreements or disappointments or frustrations in their relationship. They're taught, all right, well, whatever it is you need to do, you just need to make it better. You know, I often will hear, happy wife, happy life.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We've all heard that.
And I'm a wife, and I totally understand it, and I get it. But then also, I want to create a space where my husband can expressed his own frustrations and disappointments with me. I'm not perfect. And so when we set up our men and our women with this expectation and this unfortunate expectation that everyone has to behave in a certain way according to their gender, then it doesn't allow anyone to express flaws and disappointments. And so when if I am a male and I have a disappointment in my relationship, then it's not okay for me to say that. And so a lot of the work that we're doing here at Howard is providing that space for men to say, this is what it feels like when I'm hurt.
Are they receptive to it?
Absolutely. I can't get them to stop talking. And so they are in a room and they have a space where they talk about, this is what it means for me to be a man. I know what society has communicated to me, which is leadership, to be in control and to be dominant, to have a plan. But what if I don't have a plan? So now is my partner going to think less of me because as a man, I don't have a plan? That's unacceptable. That's setting him up for failure.
And see, it's even worse because we're assuming we're talking about opposite sex relationships. Same sex relationships, the domestic violence and dating violence rates are way higher.
Extremely.
So because
why?
So I don't know if it's
back,
right.
It goes back to
this social construction in our country. Right. Exactly. People in this world believe that only heterosexual people have relationships with one another.
Yeah, but why? But
and so if I have a relationship with someone and it doesn't fit the norm, it doesn't fit the standard, I can't, first of all, I can't tell you that I'm in that relationship. Second of all, if I'm unsafe, then I really can't tell you. Because first you're going to tell me, well, you shouldn't be in a relationship in the first place.
Judgment.
Yep. Yeah. And then second of all, you know, I have these issues and I don't know who to trust. I don't have a safe person to talk. I'm sorry, Christine.
Oh, no. You took it from me. Because we definitely see male on male and female on female. So it's not, you know, as if it doesn't happen, and it happens because it's in the shadows. So really our kids aren't talking about it because they feel like, well, just like she said, I'm embarrassed to even admit that I'm in this position with somebody of the same sex, which is unfortunate.
I think that's a good place to end this conversation. I do want to thank all of you, Dr. Rocosa McFadgian, Marsha Woodland, and Christina Jones for talking to us. And as I said, the podcast and the resources for all of the information shared on the program this evening will be on our website on WHUR.com after 8:30. That is the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Thursday, February 27th. I'm Harold Fisher. Now stay tuned for The Connection. Good night.